You are listening to the Minnesota Jazz Legends, The Elders. I'm your host, Patty Peterson. We invited jazz legend Russ Moore to come and talk about his days in the music business as a drummer, a drum shop owner, and as an officer of the Twin Cities Musicians Union. His stories will wow you on the history of the jazz music scene in the 40s and up through the years. Russ is joined by Gary Berg and Kenny Horst. Well, I know you were with the Twin Cities Musicians Union, but long before that, you were playing jazz here in the Twin Cities, and I wondered if you could recall some of the clubs that were really popular as you were first starting out in your career.
Well, I started in 1946. I started playing in Minneapolis, and the clubs then were the Dome, which became Vic's, Vic Levine, and 6th Avenue North, Howard Steakhouse, yeah, Mumbles.
Don't come up in the morning.
And there were still people on the street. Or in the paddy wagon.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you should be part of this conversation too, Gary.
Yeah. And but there was a lot of playing. I'll give you an idea. In 1946, 7, even then, there was music from 14th, which is Spruce Place, all the way down to Washington Avenue. There must have been 50 to 100 musicians, maybe not 100, but 50, working seven nights a week on Hennepin Avenue. It was a different time, that's all. And today it's changed because that's what happens with time. WCCO had a house band, Jeannie Arnold. Your mother was there, and your father, yeah. Biddy Bastian.
Right.
Yeah. Frankie Roberts. Yeah. Bob Bass was a marvelous drummer, just great. And he couldn't cover all his dates in the daytime, and he'd have a show at night, and he'd send me to go mark the parts and do the rehearsals for him. I'd say, Bob, keep it up.
Yeah. You didn't mind that, huh?
No. And Vern Rooney was the conductor of all the vaudeville shows and things going on. He's a great conductor. He got used to me. He wasn't happy to see me, but
In other words, you got a lot of work out of him.
Oh, I made a living off Bob Bass.
Oh, that. Yeah. Well, that's pretty fun. And were you, when you think about all the configurations of music and musicians, were you locked into one band that stands out in your mind?
And in the
one
Twin,
location?
In the Twin Cities?
Just in the Twin Cities.
I guess I worked with Jerry Mayron's big band off and on Dick Whitbeck had a good band at the Diamond Lils back in the late 60s. And Tommy Talbert, I worked with Tommy Talbert a long time.
Okay.
And Tommy, he was national, but he was from Minneapolis.
Wasn't there a club called the Patio?
Alpatio.
Alpatio, okay.
It's Culbertson's later on.
Yes.
It was just west of 100 on Excelsior Boulevard.
I think it's the site of Bunnies.
Lester Young. Yeah, it's where Bunnies is. Lester Young played there. Lester Young played at Vic's on 5th and Hennepin. I was working down the street, and I was hoping we'd get out of here early, and I'd run up to Vic's to hear Lester.
Yeah. Did Lester Young come from a family of musicians? Seems to me that the family lived here for about 10 years.
They lived north side, yeah. His father ran the band.
Okay.
Well, he played drums first.
Oh.
But he didn't like packing up.
Did you catch that?
Yeah. But as far as playing, I mean, the Twin Cities was a smaller community.
Okay, sure.
Now everybody's so spread out. We used to meet at the Parkway Hotel, a lot of guys every day, and eat lunch or breakfast. The Buckingham was the headquarters in the Parkway, and guys saw each other every day. Nobody worked days. Everybody played for a living, and you could make a living, as meager as it was. I mean, you're not going to retire on that money.
Yeah.
But that's okay. It changed. You're lucky you lived long enough to see the change, you know.
The Moral Squad didn't help either.
The Moral Squad? Who's the Moral Squad?
Yeah.
The Union? No.
No, that's,
They got another name for it now.
Oh.
The police department.
The police department. Okay.
And you know what's funny? You know, as far as the moral squad, the Musicians Union in Minneapolis was at 32 Glenwood. It's where third base, you know.
The
moral squad, we're up there. It stayed open. You go up there at 4 in the morning, you get a drink for a quarter. And the moral squad was always there drinking, hanging out.
Did you play other instruments in your life?
No, I never have.
No, so, drummer, how'd you get into it?
My father was a motion picture operator, and he worked at the Orpheum. And bands used to come in, Benny Goodman, Cab Calloway, Cootie Williams and the Ink Spots, and Ella Fitzgerald was one package. So I'd go back, and I got to know some of these people.
Desi Arnaz had a band that worked, came up out of the floor in the Radio City.
Ninth and LaSalle.
Radio City Theater was the biggest theater in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
The fanciest. Fancier than the Orpheum or the State or anything we have now. It was
really?
Twice as big. In fact, WCCO was right in it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the old home of WCCO-TV.
Where they had the fire and they lost a lot of the tapes and different things like that. Is that what you're talking about?
They couldn't start a flood.
That's funny.
But there was a lot of work in the, I don't remember the 30s, but in the 40s there was a lot of work. I worked clubs sometimes for 2 to 3 years at a time, out of the Duffy's on 26th and 26th.
And who were you there with?
I had the band for a couple of years. Ray Kamischke had it for a couple of years.
Did you work with Gary there? Was that one?
Gary subbed out there a lot.
Okay.
He was a child at the time. Right?
Happens.
Well, you weren't very old. Were you old enough to get in?
Not at first.
Right. But
that
the nightclub, it was a different thing. Then people danced. And the bands got away with playing any kind of music they wanted to, as long as the tempo was good for dancing. You know, now everybody knows the lyrics. You see some obscure rock band singing a tune, and the audience is all singing, and, you know, amazing.
Not dancing, they're just singing?
They know the words and everything, you know. I never saw Sardis being sung while we were playing. No.
It was a different era.
All the clubs on Hennepin Avenue had bands.
Yeah,
so guys were working six nights a week in... Hennepin Avenue clubs, but they all had strippers.
I was going to say, that's some
and
of the stories I heard
I
about.
I tried to talk Kenny into getting strippers at the Artist Quarter. And I thought maybe he'd still be there. Because the strippers packed them in.
Do you want equal territory here? It's there for you if you want it. And Charlie's Cafe Exceptional wasn't that where Peggy Lee did a lot of singing as well?
Peggy Lee was only in town with Sev Olson's orchestra at the Radisson Hotel, 1940 or 41.
Okay.
She never stayed here. And then she went with Sev, I think, some hotel in Chicago, and Benny Goodman heard her. And then that was...
Yes.
Right.
Yes, and she auditioned for him, and that was
your
the rest of history.
Your father worked with Peggy Lee with Sev Olson. That's right.
That's right, and every time Mom would get done with Charlie's, she'd walk into where they were playing together, and Peggy would always sing, "I Dream of Jeannie" with the light brown hair to her. That's so sweet. And Peggy actually needed... it was time for her to move on for reasons you'll read about in a new book coming up, but you probably all know it. There was a torrid affair going on, and she had an opportunity to audition in Chicago. And story goes, my dad lent her the money to go do it. And then she ended up with Benny Goodman.
Yeah, the best playing time I had with Jeannie was when we have a B3 organ and a guitar player, and we did that. And your mother was one of the only B3 people play their feet correctly.
Uh-huh.
Most of them are stumbling down there, yeah. And the time goes out the window. But your mother could keep time with her feet.
Where did you play for something like that? Because that I never heard her
Sleepy
talk about
Eye,
that much.
Sleepy Eye, Minnesota. They
Sleepy
loved it.
Sleepy Eye, Minnesota.
I'm serious. There was a bowling alley that we used to work there, and she drove, Walter, which was nice. I didn't have to. Yeah. But B3 can be a dangerous instrument. You know.
A dangerous instrument?
Pardon? Dangerous.
Dangerous.
Oh, very.
Oh, yeah.
In the wrong hands or feet.
Uh-huh. True. My mother could kick some mean B3.
She could.
She could kick some.
Your mother and I also did a lot of industrial shows for
did
the
you?
Old log. And we'd be in some town like Montreal. We went all over. If we'd be in some town, there'd be a band playing in the lounge. I'd say, Jeannie, why don't you go sit in? Oh, no, no. And she'd sit in and knock the people out. Every time she played, it was better than the band that was there.
My favorite thing was watching people's reaction to her.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they looked incredulous.
Yeah, exactly. Was,
that's a word, you know.
Credulous. I do. It is tonight. Okay. I want to just honor you, though, and talk to you about you and your career. And you were part of the Twin Cities Union also for a long time.
20 years. I'll tell you how that happened very briefly. I was working the Chanhassen Theater. Was there about 5 years. And the guys in the band say they didn't like the secretary treasurer for some reason. Doesn't make any difference. Why don't you run? Okay, I'll run. I got elected. My theory is they did that to get rid of me.
I don't think so.
Cornbread used to come visit me all the time.
Oh, did he?
Yep. You asked how I get to play drums?
Yes.
Before that, I played in high school band. It sounded awful, but I did anyhow. Then the summer of 46, I got kind of serious about playing, and I got so I could do some things. And then there was a band called Joe Sanders, the old left-hander, Kansas City Nighthawks, was at the Lowry Hotel in St. Paul. His drummer was leaving. I got on the band. I'm 18 years old. All of a sudden, I'm playing in Chicago, Boston. And after that, I went on different bands. Worked in a lot of ghost bands after that.
Ghost band means what?
Meaning that the leader died. That's one reason I don't play anymore.
Okay.
Tex Beneke. I worked at Tex Beneke a lot. That was Glenn Miller. Buddy Morrow, worked with him a lot. That was Tommy Dorsey. Yeah. Peanuts Huckle, that was Benny Goodman. And I'd go
Castle
out.
With pardon? Jimmy Dorsey.
Yeah, you worked with Jimmy Dorsey a long time. I would just work a week because they didn't have any work. But it was great to go out and play that music, you know. Got drafted in 1950. First day there, I was thinking, where's the band?
Oh.
Found out where it was. Within a week, I go over to the orderly room, go in and want to see, how do I get in the band? But I walk in, and there's Don Simpson, a bass player who I had seen a year before in New York with Gene Krupa. He was with Gene Krupa for years. He got drafted. Well, he fell down when I walked in. Just went, oh, he laughed. Then I got in the Army band, and that was about it.
Were you stationed elsewhere?
Protected Fort Riley, Kansas. Not one godless commie showed up.
There you go.
Not one. Got out of the Army and went to work at the Anglesey Cafe again with Jerry Hendrickson. Left there, went to Duffy's with Ray Kaminsky. Jimmy Hewitt was playing bass, one of the best bass players in the world. I had a drum shop on Lake and Hennepin from 63 to 70, early 70s, sometime in the 70s. Drumline. I hated it. I hated the retail business, and I didn't like people coming in and had a bang on everything. I used to take Kenny to work with me.
Strip club, because I wasn't old enough to drive a car. And he put me in the dressing room because I couldn't be in the audience. And I was like, I would take a bus from St. Paul to the drum shop to take a drum lesson from Russ, and I would usually stay there way after my lessons, and there wasn't a bus running. And Russ says, well, I'll give you a ride home. However, you have to come to my gig. And you were playing the first set or something, for subbing for somebody. And he put me in the dressing room, and I'm like about 16, with all these naked girls. I've never forgiven him.
This is Russ Moore, everybody. And he has been in this scene forever. And I had to have him come and share some stories.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I'm your host, Patti Peterson, and you're listening to the Minnesota Jazz Legends, The Elders.
We have the lovely Doris Hines with us to sing. And it's so beautiful because, and when I was reading the book that I had mentioned earlier, there was a lot of information about Doris in there and Cornbread and a lot of the wonderful jazz musicians that we have here in our Twin Cities. And we had and have celebrities that not only lived here, they remained here even if they traveled and opened for people or sang alongside them. And that's what Doris Hines did. And she had the opportunities to sing with Ella Fitzgerald and Sarah Vaughan, Dinah Washington, Della Reese. Let me see, the Four Tops, really? Nat Cole, Nipsey Russell, Illinois Jacquette. You can tell me more. These are all great. And the history is on here of who she is. And we can get to that more in our storytelling in just a moment. But with no further ado, I would like to introduce some new faces up here for the Jazz Legends, the Elders. And the new band is Mr. Kenny Horst on drums, everyone. And he will be included in our stories. And on bass, this is Mr. Steve Picall, who just came over here after another gig. And let me introduce you to my friend officially. This is Gary Hines, and he is the leader.
Baby.
The leader of the Sounds of Blackness, the Grammy Award winning. And joining Doris in just a moment or so is Gary Berg on saxophone, too, who is... got some stories for us as well. We'll be probably getting to some of them a little later today, but definitely I want you to hear him. But with no further ado, this gorgeous woman is ready to sing for you. Please, a warm round of applause for Ms. Doris Hines.
Them that's got shall get, them that's not shall lose, so the Bible says, and it still is news. Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got her own, that's got his own. Yes, the strong get more, while the weak ones fade. Empty pockets never make the grade. Mama may have, and Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got her own, that's got his own. Money, you got lots of friends crowding
round your door. But listen, when the money's gone and the money is spent, they don't come anymore. Rich relations give crust of bread and such, and you can help yourself. Watch out, don't take too much. Mama may have, oh yeah, Papa may have, but God bless the child that's got her own. God bless the child that's got her own. God bless the child that's got her own. That's right. Thank you. Oh, baby.
A-flat, gentlemen. All flats today. D-flat, A-flat.
Is he for you, baby?
Okay. Everybody good?
I can't hear anything.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I can't hear you.
I think that means the start. Okay. Duke would play the intro like this.
Cigarette holder, how it wakes me over his shoulder. He really digs me out catting that satin down. Baby, shall we go out catting? Look out, amigo, you're slapping, speaks Latin, that satin down. Well, he's nobody's fool, so I'm playing no fool as can be. And I'll give it a whirl, so it ain't for no guy catching me. Epidudy, telephone numbers you know, doing those rumbas, then you know. He's nobody's fool, so I'm playing no cool fool. I'm playing it cool as can be. I'm giving a whirl, but I ain't for no guy catching me. Switcheroonie, telephone numbers, well, you know, doing those rumbas, well, you know. Turned 90 November 27th. 90 years.
Doris, I want to talk a little bit about your career and what it was like for you. I want people, our listeners, to know what was it like in the beginning of your career.
When I was 16 years old, I auditioned 17 times for Arthur Godfrey's Talent Scout show. And the woman who used to pass you on whether you did or not, it was always, well, thank you, Ms. Hines. If we can use you on another show, we'll call you. You all remember Walter Winchell.
Yeah. Right.
Walter Winchell put it in his column that Doris Hines had auditioned 17 times for the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scouts. And on the 17th time, I'll never forget the woman's name if I go to hell. And she said, "Miss Hines, put your hands together and hold the mic tight." And I, fine. And I thought, I'm going to get turned down again on the 17th time. She said, "Today is Thursday. Monday you'll be on the Arthur Godfrey Talent Scout Show." Wow. I went on and I wept. I wept.
Did you weep? A good weep this time, right?
And she won.
Oh.
Walter Winchell was big time, as you know.
I think that's wonderful. I know that there was one really exceptional opportunity you got with Northwestern Bell. Weren't you the first African-American female vocalist featured in a national television commercial?
Get out of town fast. Don't waste a sec. Get out of town fast. Dial long distance.
Yeah.
That shows you. That shows you how things pass.
And, you came here in 59 in Minneapolis for 2 weeks and got held over for 6 months?
At the Sheraton Ritz Hotel, which was one of the swankiest hotels, as maybe some of you youngsters will remember.
Yeah, sure.
And I was booked on a union contract for 1 month, and I was there for 1 year.
That's beautiful.
And I loved it. The audience was just like you, just like you. I sang and sang and sang.
I'm going home to see my baby, sweet baby of mine. It's so long since I see baby. Sometimes I feel I'm lost.
You've been listening to Minnesota Jazz Legends, The Elders, hosted and produced by Patty Peterson. Executive producer, Michelle Jansen. Production engineers are Steve Weiss and Scott Melchow at Creation Audio and Ricky Peterson at Workhouse Studios. Minnesota Jazz Legends, The Elders, is funded by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. This is a production of KBEM.
All I do is dream about baby and his ever-loving ways.